this bullshit called PC. I guess you didn't know, but you don't mess with generally.
Alrighty, you one of them rednecks? You one of them people that's tired of PC? If you're like me, you probably are. This is Clint Locklear with Man Strong Podcast. And this is one of the shows that I thoroughly enjoy doing because it allows me to talk about things that I see going on every day that I think, my humble opinion, from somebody that doesn't really matter about anything in the world, that we need stronger men in this country or we're going to have hard times coming in the future. So we're going to talk about a little bit of physical strength tonight, and what I'm referring to is if you're having knee problems or you're getting up in age and you don't want to have bad knees, yeah, you may want to stay around and listen to this. Before we do that, I want to talk about being a barbarian. I read this in a book, and the more I thought about it, the more this makes more sense than anything that I've been trying to do in the last year that I can put into a context where I can understand it. And then we're going to end the show with a little bitty excerpt from Jocko. If you don't know who he is, you can look him up online. He's got a podcast. Dude's a stud muffin, 100% alpha male, ex-Navy SEAL. And just the way he looks at the world is the way men needs to look at the world. So hopefully he don't get mad with me playing that, but it is an amazing, amazing little 2.5 minutes on just one little word, good. Before we get into tonight's show, I want to thank our sponsor, which is Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. Alan is the owner of that company. They're out of Iowa. If you're into trapping or predator calling and a lot of outdoor supplies, stuff like that, check out Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. They're all over the internet. They really, really are awesome at customer service. Guys that you know that when you deal with them, you'll be grateful that you did, just basically because they're that good of a company. And that's one of the reasons I'm so proud to have them as a sponsor of Man Strong Podcast. Okay, barbarian. What does that mean? You know, to me, barbarian can mean a lot. Now, if you've read Iron John, which for goodness sake, if you hadn't, get it on audiobook and listen to it. If you're swinging at all, you need to read Iron John, because it'll lead you down some places, it'll make you uncomfortable, and it will, if you're a parent, you definitely need to read it. And there's a phrase in there, which I've talked about before, and it's the big hairy man at the bottom of the pond. And it's the wild man. Now, the wild man in Iron John is not exactly a barbarian. That's where the civilized world gets confusing. That's the reason churches don't like wild men. That's the reason corporations don't like wild men and governments don't like wild men, because wild men are a little bit harder to control because they're not big wusses. They can make decisions on their own, and that is not what the powers to be want men to do. Nor feminists, by the way. But a barbarian is not the same as the big hairy man. What I'm referring to is what was a barbarian way back in the day. Now, we've talked a lot about becoming mentally stronger, and we've talked a lot about becoming physically stronger, because in my opinion, the more physically strong you get, the more mentally strong you will become. The more physically tough you are, the more mentally tough you are. They kind of go hand in hand. It's hard to be really, really strong in everyday life situations if you just feel like if the wind blows a little bit too much, you're going to fall over. That's not what you want, and I guarantee you that's not what your girlfriend or your wife wants either. They want to know they've got a competent, capable man that they're going to be hanging around with, and not just somebody that can barely do anything more than what they can do. But a barbarian. Now, when I think of barbarians, I think back to what it was probably like when Attila the Hun and all of their little gang went all across Asia, basically killing, raping, and pillaging everything they come across. Now, I don't think that's the most ethical way to go about life, so I'm not going to use them as an example for this, but I bet it's going to be pretty close on the example. The other is kind of like Vikings from the Scandinavians, or maybe some of the German barbarians that went against Rome. Barbarians were not dumb. That's just what civilized people call people that aren't, they're not paying taxes, basically. If you're not paying taxes, then you're a barbarian. That's all throughout history. So that's what that meant. But they weren't as, quote, civilized, which means they had a lot harder life. So like some of the German barbarians that, gave Rome such hard problems, and the Vikings that came in and pretty much thrashed all of Europe, they were extremely smart, they were extremely dedicated, but they weren't as sophisticated, and they weren't specialist. That word specialist, I want you to let that just sink in for a little bit. Specialist. Barbarians were more like the jack of all trades. You know, they didn't really have people that were very specialized the way that we have them in civilization, which means they had to be more well-rounded to survive everyday life. They pretty much built their house. They took care of their own livestock. They protected their family. They went to war. They went out and hunted. They were physically strong because their everyday life made them do many tasks that they could do. And then you have a specialist. So when I think of a specialist, I think of someone that is more like someone that's really good with a sword. With the sword, they can really, really do a lot of damage. But if you take their special thing away, like a sword, now they've got to fight, if that's what they're doing, without their specialty, and most of them are probably not going to be very good. Like in the military, we were very good with, believe it or not, most guys in the military are not very good with handguns in the infantry that I'm talking about. Because the only person in a unit that would have a pistol would be a lieutenant, maybe a first sergeant, and then the assistant gunner to the hog. Now, see, I was the actual guy that shot the hog, not the assistant gunner. That's what I did. I shot M60 machine guns when I was in the 101st, and partly when I was in the 6th Infantry Division. So we had this great big 308, fully automatic, large mechanism called an M60 machine gun, belt fed. It was everybody's friend in a firefight unless you were on the other end of it. But you didn't carry an AR, you know, 15 basically, or you know what we had were models of M4s, and you know, like the, you know, the old M16s. If you're understanding weapons very much, you didn't have a smaller arm with you, like some that shoots 5.56 out of an M4 type rifle. You would have a 45. Later, it turned into the Beretta 9mm. So you had I was the only one that had a pistol in my platoon besides my lieutenant. And there's each squad has their own 60 gunner, so in every squad they had their pistol. So most people weren't trained with a pistol. Most people spend most of their time in the military and the infantry combat units with an M4 version, whatever it is at the moment that the military's handing out. And they become specialists with clearing buildings and shooting distance and shooting close up and stuff like that. And there's a misconception that if you're in a combat infantry that you're like a master of hand-to-hand combats. I'm telling you right now, that ain't the way it is. We played around with training with bayonets, which if you can, you know, put a something sharp on the end of a stick and stab somebody with it or slash them with it, then you're pretty much competent with a bayonet. That's a very barbaric tool to use. We did do some training on how to block punches and stuff like that. We got into a little more training with some of the individual platoons that I was in. Like someone's coming around a corner and they have their barrel out, who controls the barrel, controls the gun, different things like that. You learn different things that are not just with pulling a trigger on an M4. What happens if the soldier's M4 breaks, is lost, and they no longer have the M4 version that they're used to using, and they don't have a pistol, and they're in the middle of a fight? See, the way we were trained was specialist with 5.56 ammo coming out of a short semi-automatic rifle. If we lost that, you can go off pure instinct, but really all your training is involved with the specialty of an M4 variant. Just like someone with a sword. Why did the barbarians in the past cause so much trouble for the civilized nations? They weren't specialists. They didn't have specialties. Now, some may favor an axe or a sword or a dagger or a pike or a big freaking hammer, but if they lost that in battle, they can pick up any weapon and they were fairly proficient. The other difference was the physical strength of the barbarians, because of the way they lived. When it came to hand to hand, they could grab you and smash you like Hulk. They could beat you to death with their feet and their head and their hands. If you're a specialist, you don't automatically go that direction in a conflict. You're looking for a technique. You're looking for another specialty you can grab a hold of pretty quick. Barbarians were not specialists. They were stronger and they were more well-rounded. So in conflict, because no matter what's going on, no matter what the plan is in combat, everything falls apart about the time people start losing guts everywhere. And you lose weapons and all kind of stuff. And back in that time period, it was a lot more hand-to-hand than it was a lot of the specialty stuff like you see on the movies. If you look at history, the barbarians won that all the time. So I'm saying, maybe the way that we should look at our physical fitness should be like a barbarian. Now, I read a book, and I can't remember the title of it because I've read several in the last couple of weeks. But the guy talks about and uses the example of barbarians and the specialists. So what I'm talking about with a specialist and getting fit, I want you to think about something. You have Olympic weightlifting. Highly, highly specialized lifting. You see a lot of this lifting in CrossFit. They're doing snatch and jerks and snatch and cleans, and they're doing straight jerks and stuff like that. Highly technical type stuff. And you have powerlifting. That is really, even though that is an amazing sport as far as showing strength and building strength, it is very much a specialty. You're training for three lifts: squat, deadlift, and bench. That's what you're training for. Squat, deadlift, and bench. Nothing else really matters to a powerlifter except the three specialty lifts of squat, deadlift, and bench. And you may think from the very beginning of that those aren't really specialty lifts. If you were to watch a really dedicated power lifter bench. It does not look like anything you see in the average gym. Yes, he's on his back. Yes, he's got barbells in his hands. Yes, he puts it down to his torso. And yes, he pulls it up. And I'm going to prove this to you if you don't know anything about specialty benching. Where have you been taught, if you've ever lifted weights, that you bring the bar on bench press? Now, I know all the bros are going to get mad at me that's been taught this their whole life, that were taught by other people, but they don't really know the deal. You're supposed to bring it down somewhere around your nipples, right? Wrong. That is someone that doesn't know the specialty of a bench press. I want you to do something right now. I want you to stand up. And I want you to put your arms down to your side. And I want you to have your palms sticking up. And I want you to have them out on about a 45 degree angle. I want them touching your side, and I want your palms up. Rotate your hands till your palms are down. Where, if you had a bar in your hands, would that hit you? It's nowhere close to your nipples. Why? Because using physics and leverage, that is a more powerful position to bench press than what everybody was taught in high school, me included, that you bring it down with a wide grip, down on top of your nipples, and you push off. When you learn that motor skill, you can start cranking some weight. You also learn that when you bring your arms down, you need to build your lats so you can physically put your elbows on your back muscles once you build them up. And then when you tense up, you can actually move the weight to get it started with your lats, not your chest. See, I can keep going with a bench press. I can do the same thing with a squat or a deadlift. Those are really technical lifts if you're ever going to be a specialist in those lifts. But there's only three. They don't do the Olympic lifts. And Olympic lifters don't do powerlifting lifts. And then you have bodybuilders. They're more worried about hypertrophy. They want to get the biggest muscles and put them under the most time under tension. They do a lot of specialized stuff as far as lighter weights, partial reps. They do a lot of things that put your body in not very good physics and leverage to do lifts, to put your muscles under strain, to try to grow muscles. Now, there's some strong power lifters, bodybuilders, but they don't want to go to a powerlifting competition. And the powerlifting guys, most of them don't want to get up on a stage on a bodybuilding competition because they don't do that. So bodybuilding is a specialty all of its own. Then we come across something called strongman. Lo and behold, I want to welcome you to the barbarians of the physical world. That's what these boys are. They're barbarians. You want them to lift a stone off the ground that weighs 400 pounds? Not a problem. You want them to put handles on a log and press it over their head where they don't have the best leverages that a specialist would need that's an Olympic lifter? Not a problem. You need them to pull an 18-wheeler by strapping it to their back? Not a problem. Pick up a 300-pound keg and walk off with it? Not a problem. Hold pillars that to an average person would rip your arms clear off your body for time. Not a problem. Deadlift, amazing weights, not a problem. Do clean and presses with bars that don't rotate like Olympic lifts do, which is drastically different. Not a problem. You need them to squat? Not a problem. You need them to be able to push something away from them with it takes a lot of strength and endurance, not a problem. See, strong men are not specialists by any stretch of the imagination. They're just freaking strong. How do they get strong? Farmer's walks, carrying with yokes. If you're not into all this, trust you, just look it up online. You'll see it pretty quick. They train to be barbaric. The strongest deadlift in history is not by a specialist powerlifter. Not even close. Eddie Hall from England deadlifted 1,100 pounds raw. That means without any type of compression suits. Passed out when he got done, but he did it. They carry yokes that are 900 to 1,000 to 1,500 pounds, and they got to walk across a stage with them on their back. See, the beautiful thing about strongman is the strongmen look at all of the other specialties and can do all of those. They bench, they squat, they deadlift like powerlifters. They also do hypertrophy like a bodybuilder. The big guy, Robert, that wears the shirts, if you've ever seen any strongmen, he's from Texas, he's like 6 foot six or something, weighs 350 something pounds. He wears a shirt that says strong and pretty. It's always got pink on it. He's got a great big old burly barbarian beard and hair. Looks like he ain't ever combed it. He does a lot of hypertrophy work. You can watch videos of Brad Shaw. They're not just worried about a lift. They're worried about their hand strength. They're worried about their forearm strength. They're worried about building up bigger shoulders so they can press and bench. They're worried about their glutes because they understand that's probably the most important muscle group or the posterior chain of a human being that's ever going to have to do anything with strength. Barbaric. So if you're looking for a way to train that is functional and you're looking for a way to train that's not a specialty, you want to train like a strongman. They drag stuff, they push stuff, they pick stuff up, they flop stuff over their back. It's crazy when you start looking at the what they can do that would kill a bodybuilder and kill a powerlifter. And the Olympic lifters, because that's kind of a snobby thing, they would run away out of disgust because of the uncivilized would want them to do something uncivilized. So when you're looking at your training, if you want to become stronger, think about what you're doing. Are you working yourself into a specialty, or do you want to work yourself into being a barbarian? You know, the hardest people the civilized ever had to try to kill were barbarians. Because they could do anything. They could lay their own foundations with their hands. They could put their own walls up with their own hands. They would carry the livestock that were sick on their back. They would go to war with whatever they could get their hands on and kill the specialist. Just like Coach Ripito says, stronger people are harder to kill and they're more practical. So if you're looking for a way to train, think about the barbarian. Part of this, which is I've been trying to train like this, is like example of a deadlift. Most people that deadlift for a meet are specialized in one or two things. A conventional deadlift, which is what most people think of. You have your arms, you bend down at the waist and you have your arms on the outside of your leg and you pull it off the floor and stand up. Or you have sumo, which your legs are wider and your hands are actually straight down, and it's a very technical way to lift. Then you have trap bar deadlifts. You have to look that up if you don't know what it is. I do all of them. Every week, I totally change technique because I'm not worried about being a specialist in either one of them. I just want to have the back of a barbarian. So when I'm out hunting and I need to drag a big old wild boar back over to the truck so we can go get the guts out of it and get the back straps off of it, I've got the strength to do that. If I need to work on a car, if I need to do something in my shop and I don't have people around. I need to have the physical strength to do that. Stronger people are harder to kill and more functional. Keep the barbarian in mind. The other thing, guys, and this is not just all about lifting, but I want you to think about something. I run around with a lot of outdoorsmen. Young, old, older, oldest. And there's a very common theme with outdoorsmen. They have knee problems. Now, I found a podcast from a guy by the name of Louis Simmons. Louis Simmons is probably, he owns a gym in Columbus, Ohio. It's called Westside Barbell. He's come out with an American version of conduit training, which we're not going to get into because it's highly complicated and I'm not sure I understand it all anyway. But he started a podcast that I found on Stitcher, and I don't know how old it is, and there's only like 30 episodes, and I don't think they're putting any more out. But it's about sports. Now, even though he's a powerlifting legend, it's got more world records out of that gym than anybody else. He's interested in football players. He actually, if you want to know kind of what happens when you take average strong athletes and turn them into barbarians, look at Clemson in college football. When did Clemson start becoming the powerhouse that they were? About a year after they start listening to Louis Simmons. Because, with football, if you're a barbarian, can whoop the ass of the average barbarian on the other team, guess who wins a football game? The stronger barbarian. That's what Clemson has done. Since that time, now he helps Cleveland Browns. He helps a lot of the Seattle Seahawks. He's talked to the Broncos. He has coaches coming down all the time. They're learning. He helps train, believe it or not, shot putters and javelin throwers and disc throwers. And he does a lot with sprinters and college football and professional football. I don't know so much about baseball. But his techniques of becoming, because that's what conjugate is, you turn into a freaking barbarian if you're going to go by his system, to specialize in those three lifts. And he talks about all these different sports on this podcast, the West Side Barbell Podcast. And I was listening to some of these. Now, he's a fascinating guy. He could have been a cult leader, I have no doubt. He could have had people follow him because he talks like he's a spreadsheet and half computer. And he can rattle stuff off. And it's super, super impressive. He just knows his stuff. And he's talking about football players. And he's throwing a fit on one of the podcasts about all the ACL injuries of football players. And the reason he says that the NFL players and college players and even high school players have so many knee injuries, it's not because something happens on the field, it's because they're physically weak in their posterior chain. Now, that chain, if you don't know what that is, it's your calves, your hamstrings, your glutes, or AKA your butt, and your lower back. That's your posterior chain. Anytime a football player comes off the line, it's all posterior chain. Sprinters, when they sprint, it's all posterior chain. It's not the quads, it's the posterior chain. That locks in all of the tendons and the ligaments in your knees. But for years, the NFL has got away from heavy squats. They do not deadlift. And they do not really work on the posterior chain of their athletes. Now, they'll give it some token stuff, but explosion comes from your posterior chain. like at Westside Barbell, he's got 300-pound powerlifters with guts that can jump on 58 and 60-inch boxes that the NFL would go gaga over if they had a 200-pound runner or wide receiver could repeat that process. They can't. His whole thing is, what is the weakness of a person? And that has a lot to do with the congenit style of training. And what I think in most people's lives today, me included on this, is we have a weak posterior chain, and our knees are going to pay the consequences for that. So if you're going to the gym and you're focusing on things that build up your quads, because when people think of muscular legs, they think of the top of the legs where they got the meat hanging over the kneecap and stuff like that. That's not all that helpful for your knees. That's not really what protects it. Now see, the way Lewis Simmons talks about the congenit system, and he uses all these different type of exercises like a barbarian would do in daily life, and he's using bands and chains and different reps and different exercises and all that. They've actually had people come in and test his power lifters, because some of these dudes are squatting 1,000 pounds and they have zero knee problems. And one of the things that really cracked me up on one of the podcasts is they had a female world record sprinter that came in and was running her mouth, and one of the fat powerlifters beat her in a 40-yard dash. Why? He was stronger. That's why. Now, she got on top of him about 80 yards. But in a 40-yard dash, it was embarrassing, apparently. He could do that because his posterior chain, his calves, hamstrings, glutes, and lower back could fire with amazing power because of all of the other exercises that they do. And Louis Simmons talks about the issue in the NFL with the knees is not all of the balancing stuff that they do now, or the sidestepping and, you know, trying to do squats with one leg on a ball, on a platform, and all that type stuff. They physically don't have the strength to handle the abuse that they do on a day-to-day basis. That's why there's so many knee braces you see in the NFL and ACL injuries. So that got me thinking, what about normal, everyday people? And when I'm thinking about all of the people that I know of with knee injuries, what Louis Simmons talked about building up your posterior chain makes a whole lot of sense. A lot of these guys don't have a butt. They don't have hamstrings. They don't do anything really in their everyday life to do that. And then all of a sudden they're walking across the yard and they step just a little bit funny and their knee goes sideways. The next thing you know, they're getting shots or they're getting a surgery or something like that. Why does that happen? It's because the muscles that control the knee are weak. Louis Simmons has had scientists come to his gym and measure the ligaments and tendons on his powerlifters. An interesting thing became very clear. When you work those posterior chains, all the ligaments that surround and go through your knee and everything, they get bigger, stronger, and more elastic. Wow. Strong muscles build strong tendons. Strong tendons and ligaments hold joints together. So, if you're having knee problems, is it because you have a bum knee? Or you got a weak posterior chain? I'm willing to bet it's a weak posterior chain. Now, what's the doctor going to tell you? I'm not giving medical advice here because I'm not a doctor and that's illegal. The doctor's going to tell you to take it easy. Baby it. try not to put it under any stress. Okay. Logically, through my life experience, I remember breaking my arm when I was young. I've also dislocated my shoulder several times. When they put me in a sling and a cast, I remember the day that I took that off. My arm was half the size of my other arm. It took me about a week and a half after, I think it was 6 weeks of having it in a sling and I couldn't raise my arm, for me to physically be able to move my arm with no weight over my head. Everything was weak. Why was it weak? Because I didn't use it. If you get sick and stay in a hospital bed and you don't walk, everything gets weaker and you're more apt to get hurt. Now, when a doctor tells a patient that has like a weak back problems and weak knees to take it easy, someone please tell me the difference between that and someone putting that person in a cast and wondering why they get weaker and their ligaments and joints and muscles get smaller. Because if your muscles and your ligaments and your tendons get smaller, do you think you're more apt to hurt yourself, or do you think you're more apt to be able to function without getting hurt? Because I hear this all the time, because I've got family members with back problems. They bring it up and I go, dude, need a deadlift. I can't deadlift, I got a bad back. I'm like, no, you got a weak back that's got a problem. Do you think it's better to have a strong back with a problem or a weak back with a problem? Now, the real reason is they don't want to do anything. And they get weaker. And over the years, I've noticed their back problems become worse. Now, I can honestly say that I don't have back problems. I've got a strong back. It's way stronger in the last year than it's been in the past. The stronger my backs get, the more bulletproof it gets. It's amazing how that works. Same with the knees. I'm 50 years old. I spent majority of my adult life at 320 to 340 pounds. I should have some screwed up knees. I've also been very active, even though I was a fatty. Spent hours and hours slodging through beaver swamps and coming up the sides of rivers and stuff like that, straining all the time. I think that had something to do with my knees having enough strength to be able to handle my big fat butt sitting over top of them. But a lot of people don't do that on a regular basis. But when they do go to a beaver swamp or on a big deer hunt or an elk hunt, they come home injured. It's because you're weak. See, being weak is not just about physically being able to move something or to look jacked and tan or to be able to actually one day look down and actually see your penis without your belly being in the way. It is to be able to function in life. So if you have knee problems, should you put it in a cask and let it wither away? Or should you make them get stronger? Body adapts. It's an amazing thing. They've actually learned now through science and medical community, when you have an injury, the worst thing you can do to that injury is not do anything with the joint. So if something happens to your shoulder, you need to get blood in there. That's the only way it gets nutrients. You don't have to do anything heavy. You need to do repetition. Same with knees. But the average doctor that's not in sports medicine is going to tell you to take it easy. If you don't have knee problems and you don't want to have knee problems, let me ask you this. Do you think it's better or worse to have the strongest muscles around that and the strongest ligaments and tendons around that so when something happens, you step off a step wrong or something like that, that you have the physical strength not to just tear stuff all to pieces. I think we both know what that answer is. Now, how do we do that? There's several things. There's kind of things you can do at home, and there's things you can do at a gym, and there's things you can do at a really good gym. At home, you can, if you want to, afford a pair of a dumbbell that's a real one and get you about, 300 pounds of weights. You're going to be into that maybe $300. If your knees are not worth $300, don't bitch about your knees, because you probably pay that in cable and cell phone every month anyway. You can deadlift. Deadlift, conventionally, not sumo, conventionally builds up your whole posterior chain. You don't have to try to break world records. If you're deadlifting, you get to the point where you can rep out 315 pounds, you're going to have a strong posterior chain, which means your knees are going to stay healthy a long, long time. Age has nothing to do with it. You can get online right now and see that there's people in their 70s deadlifting 500 pounds. Most people that are listening to this today cannot move 500 pounds off the floor. So age doesn't have anything to do with it. Another thing you can do is leg curls, which will help your hamstrings. You'll have to have a gym, or you can do bands to do that with. And what Louis Simmons was talking about with the strength of his guys on their hamstrings, they would use light bands relative to their strength, and they may do 200 reps in an afternoon of leg curls. Cost you about $15 down at Walmart. You can do, some people call these hip thrusters, some people call them all different kind of things, but basically if you lean back on a chair, where it's all under your shoulders, like a couch or something, and you put your legs where your shins are straight up and down, and you basically lower your hips down and you forcibly move them up, that will build your hamstrings and your glutes. When that becomes not hard, do it with one leg. When that becomes not hard, use a dumbbell or a barbell across your hips and do that. Tremendous strength builder. There's Romanian deadlifts and stiff-legged deadlifts. I highly suggest before you do any one of these that you go to some people that have a good reputation for quality information online on YouTube. Guys that are either strong men or power lifters, have been doing it a long time, and learn how to correctly do a Romanian deadlift or a stiff-legged deadlift. They're the same thing, guys. It just depends if you start with it on the floor or you're standing up. You got to keep your butt poked out, just like you're, a bikini model on Instagram trying to show how bodacious your butt is. And you keep the bar in close over your feet, and you don't try to lift it up with your back. You actually pull with your butt. It will light you up. But you need to have good form. You can do good mornings. You can do good mornings without weight, but eventually that will become too easy. Basically, if you just stand up and bend over at the waist and go parallel and just stand back, raise back up. With a safety squat bar at a gym, you got to act like you're the Instagram butt model again. You need to have a belt on. And basically, you're going to bend over with weight. This is what I do. Bend over with weight. And you're going to want to go parallel to the floor with your back straight and your butt stick out. You just don't bend over like you're going to pick up a pack of gum or something off the floor. And you get your body really tense and you'll be okay. If you do it sloppy, you're going to get hurt. They're called good mornings. A lot of people will tell you not to do them. You can make that decision. I think those people just don't like to work. Or they don't understand how to do the movement. I think it's extremely safe. The best thing you can do for all those is a reverse hyper. A reverse hyper is a machine that Louis Simmons has a patent on. You can look that up online. Very few gyms have them. If you're mechanical, you could probably build something to mimic it. Basically, you lay on a table, you have a pivot underneath you, and you've got a strap that comes off the pivot where you put your feet in and you put bars on the side and you lift your leg straight back. The best posterior chain builder known to man. You can buy them for about $500. If you got a bad back and it's not worth $500, don't bitch about your back. The reason you want to do these with a bad back is it decompresses your joints all the way up to the middle of your back. So when that pendulum comes down, because it's underneath, it's about crotch when you're laying on the table, when it comes down, that weight will actually decompress your spine. So it's regenerative and it's building at the same time. And then when you bring your legs back up, the only thing that can move it is your posterior chain. That's called a reverse hyper. If you can't do that, get you a great big duffel bag and put, depending on your strength, 100, 200 pounds of sand in that bad boy. And get down and basically deadlift that thing up to your knees and stand up with it and repeat the process. See, there, a ball bearing can do anything if he puts his mind to it. Posterior chain. The more you work calves to your lower back, the more stable your knees are going to be. Louis has helped a lot of professional football players with knee problems. How did he do it? He made their posterior chain stronger. Really, the only two groups of people that worry about your posterior chain in a big way are strongmen and powerlifters. That's what moves a deadlift. That's what moves a squat if you're doing a wide stance. That's what allows you to pick Atlas stones off the ground, heavy kegs, heavy sandbags, how to be able to pull a truck. If you have kids, let me tell you, you need to listen to some of those podcasts where he talks about sprinting. If you've got kids that want to play sports, if you can convince them that if they're more valuable as an athlete, if they're faster, and most kids will understand this. That's why, you know, when you go to college or pros, they want to know what your 40 time is. 4.6 or 5 feet, 5 flat. There's a huge difference in that about a coach getting excited over a kid. The stronger the posterior chain is on your kid, the faster he's going to run. He can run all he wants to. He's not going to get any faster till he gets stronger. Look at sprinters. The fastest group of sprinters in the world are from Jamaica. Look at their legs. Their hamstrings are almost as big as their quads. Why? But they can put over 1,000 pounds of force every time they move. Because that's what gets you faster is the back of your legs, not the front of your legs. The only thing the front of your legs does on a sprint is keep your knee from collapsing when it hits the ground and to get the shin out of the way as posterior chain moves it forward. The only thing the top of your legs do is extend your legs straight out. So if you're going to run with your quads, think about that. Doesn't work. So if you have a kid and he's going to be playing sports, and he wants to be faster, get his posterior chain built up. And if he wants to not have knee injuries, or really reduce the chance of that happening, he He needs to have a serious set of hamstrings, glutes, lower back, and calves. Lo and behold, things work out. So, I know that's a long way to go about. If you don't want to have knee problems, you need to have a strong posterior chain. And I personally don't want to be 51 with knee problems. I got things I still want to go do. I don't want to be 60 with knee problems. I'm still going to have things I want to go do. And when I'm 70, I don't want knee problems. I'm still going to have things that I want to go do. So you can pay now or you can pay later. But you're going to pay one way or the other. That is the truth. Weak body invites injury. And how is that going to help you become the best man that you could be at all ages? If you're walking around and all crippled, you ain't going to be doing a whole bunch. I know a lot of you guys that listen to this probably are not into weightlifting, but hopefully you're into life. And if you're into life, you'll do better off. Now, this last thing that I'm going to do on tonight's show is, like I said, it's from Jocko. You can look him up on YouTube. He's got all kind of stuff. He's an ex-Navy SEAL. This, the way he looks at the world, is the way men, I believe, should look at the world. He's aggressive, but controlled. He's aggressive, but he's disciplined. And his attitude does not allow him to fall apart when anything goes wrong really, really quick. So, like I said, I hope Jocko don't get mad for me doing this. But if you've never listened to him and you want to actually get some things in your head that'll just change the way you look at being a man, check him out. He's really good.
One of my direct subordinates, one of my guys that worked for me, he would call me up or pull me aside with some major problem, some issue that was going on. And he'd say, "Boss, we got this and that and the other thing." And I'd look at him and I'd say, "Good." And finally, one day he was telling me about some issue that he was having, some problem. And he said, "I already know what you're going to say." I said, "Well, what am I going to say?" He said, "You're going to say good." He said, "That's what you always say. When something is wrong and going bad, you always just look at me and say good." And I said, "Well, yeah, when things are going bad, there's going to be some good that's going to come from it. Didn't get the new high-speed gear we wanted? Good. Didn't get promoted? Good. More time to get better. Oh, mission got canceled? Good. We can focus on another one. Didn't get funded? Didn't get the job you wanted? Got injured? Sprained my ankle? Got tapped out? Good. Got beat? Good. Learned. Unexpected problems? Good. We have the opportunity to figure out a solution. That's it. When things are going bad, don't get all bummed out. Don't get startled. Don't get frustrated. If you can say the word good, guess what? It means you're still alive. It means you're still breathing. And if you're still breathing, well, now you still got some fight left in you. So get up, dust off, reload, recalibrate, re-engage, and go out on the attack.
Words of wisdom from Mr. Jocko. Now just remember, guys, you got a choice this coming up week. You can man up or panty up. You're going to do one of the two. Which one is it?